Welcome, everyone. I am here today with my dear colleague and friend, renowned expert in group psychotherapy, Jeff Hudson. And we're here to talk about his upcoming event here in the Bay Area with NCGPS on Saturday, October 6th from 9:15 to 5:30. And he is running a day long that's called Emotional Availability in Group, Fostering Intimacy in Challenging Times. So I would love to introduce Jeff and say hello.
Hey, Laura.
I'm so happy you're here.
It's very good to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really happy. So I just wanted to give people a chance to hear a little bit more from you about the event and just learn a little bit about you. I know how amazing and wonderful you are, and I just wanted everyone to get a sense of that. So maybe you can share a little bit more specific about what you're planning to discuss at the event.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to being there. And when I look at the day, I really think about two overarching topics. The first being emotional availability, where we're looking at the availability of group leaders and also working with our group members' emotional availability. Mm-hmm. And the second overarching topic is the modern analytic approaches to expanding the capacity for intimacy, both within the leader and with the people that we work with. During the morning part of the workshop, I'll be discussing the role of emotional availability in group leadership. And what we'll look at is some of the influence of the leader's personal history, as well as the process of countertransference resistance on our emotional availability. I have an idea that through unconscious communication, our patients get a sense of what feelings we're open to experiencing, feelings that we'd prefer not to feel. And so as we become open to feeling a greater range and intensity of emotions, we increase the possibility that our patients will do the same thing. Another thing I'll be trying to emphasize to people is that none of us as therapists can be open to all emotions at all times. And so fortunately, when we're working with groups, we can rely on group members' reports of their own feelings to know more about our own emotional experiences with the group. So what's most important is that our group members are working with a leader who's open to the full range of human emotion. When this doesn't happen, over time, group members will probably omit more and more aspects of their emotional life from the group. So that'll be the focus of the morning. And then in the afternoon, we'll be looking at common resistances to intimacy that everyone will recognize. We all as therapists encounter resistances to intimacy within ourselves, within our patients. And we'll be looking at these. They'll probably be quite familiar to you. And looking at modern analytic strategies for working with barriers to intimacy. I think one of the most basic obstacles that we encounter around people's resistances to intimacy is people's fears of feeling something they don't want to feel. We all kind of have these visceral, you know, embedded physical memories of the hurts that have happened in the relationships we've had, the important ones, the ways we've been hurt or the ways we've hurt other people. And possibly in an unconscious way, we can structure our lives to avoid re-experiencing these hurts. Yet it's kind of automatic for us to return to similar kinds of interpersonal dynamics. So the people that we work with have to deal with both a fear of being hurt or re-experiencing hurtful feelings and an unconscious wish to repeat patterns. So in an overriding way, I think what people are most afraid of is the hurts that have happened in intimate relationships and that they will just occur again without being addressed.
And that just sounds like it's going to be such a rich, fulfilling day for all of us as group leaders.
Yes. There's my hope. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that you're really getting to the meat of the issue of what's hard in group. Yeah. I wonder if you could speak a little bit to what the day might look like, sort of how you're going to explore these topics with folks.
Okay. Yeah. We have, I think, about a 6-hour workshop or so. There will be several didactic presentations, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. There are going to be several opportunities for small group discussions where I've gathered some questions that I feel really help people to move more deeply into the experience of their work, their clinical work, into the influences of their histories on their work, to their own experiences of intimacy and what's been hard and what works well. We'll have two meetings of a demonstration group, and then we'll end the day with a large group experience. What I'm really hoping for is that I'll provide opportunities for people to engage and participate in a way that allows them to learn.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a bunch of different mechanisms to do that: conversation or didactic, and then small group and a demo group. I mean, it sounds like you're really covering the range. That's exciting for different people.
Great. Yeah.
And, you know, I wonder, we're going to have both experienced group therapists and then also people that are new to group therapy.
Yes.
What are your thoughts are about addressing kind of those differing needs in the room?
Yeah. The modern analytic focus on the study of countertransference and the leader's emotional availability are really relevant to clinicians of all levels of experience. Mm-hmm. I've taught this material to 14 affiliate societies of AGPA, and as I do, I continue to be struck by the usefulness of modern analytic technique to clinicians who practice from a variety of theoretical orientations, not just strictly a modern psychoanalytic or psychoanalytic perspective. I've also seen the relevance of the modern analytic approach to therapists who primarily work with individuals or couples or family. Mm-hmm. So I really am a firm believer of lifelong learning for therapists. I believe all of us have things to learn, and all of us also have valuable wisdom and perspectives to contribute to the conversation. So I'm hoping we'll have really an engaged day where everyone can feel free to participate and to learn and grow.
Yeah, it sounds beautiful. It sounds exactly what we need. So some people might not really be familiar with modern analytic. And in the materials, we call out some of the specific modern analytic techniques of joining, emotional communication, and the contact function. I wonder if maybe you could share a little bit about each of these things for folks now, just so they can get a taste of what does modern analytic mean? Like, how's it different, or what's the meat of it?
Yep. What we'll be really learning about, I hope, are modern analytic approaches to working with resistances. Mm-hmm. And common resistances might be resistances to feeling one's emotions, resistances to talking, or to experiencing greater intimacy. Those that you mentioned, joining, emotional communication, and contact functioning, are three common modern analytic techniques for working with resistance. I'm going to really be defining those in an in-depth way during the workshop and providing clinical examples. But to just give you a general idea of what those lead towards, what I'm doing when I work with people in a group or in a modern analytic way, even in individual or couples, I'm working to create an atmosphere where people feel invited rather than required to say more about their internal feelings and their feelings toward others. That's the emotional communication piece. And over time, I really work to titrate my work with member emotions to match their level of openness. For example, if clients encounter obstacles to being more open, I try to respect their reluctance, but invite them to talk about their fears of what would happen if they communicate more freely. In terms of the workshop, and this is true for me as a group therapist too, I really try to use myself as a model of what it means to be emotionally alive and open to engagement. As I've really come to understand my own process of change and growth over time, I've really come to appreciate that it's frequently more effective to join resistances rather than to try to remove them. And I'll be talking about that throughout the day and providing clinical examples.
Oh, that's great. Great. And that's just going to be a really rich discussion, because out in the Bay Area, we just don't have a lot of modern analytic. I don't think we have anybody. So you're one of the first people to sort of really bring that to this community.
Wonderful. I'm happy to do that.
Yeah. And so another thing that I'm aware that is going to be part of the day is that there was a desire to address how you see the current political climate impacting groups and how we might explore that together during the day.
Yes.
I wonder if you could say more about that.
Absolutely. I think one of the primary impacts of this political environment on our groups is that many group members are dealing with increased amounts of fear and anxiety. They may experience greater challenges with emotional regulation. Political and ideological divisions have become more visible in our country. The divisions, I think, have led to increased levels of fear, threat, of tendencies towards splitting. So it can become more challenging to see nuances, shades of gray, and really our shared humanity. I think because of the levels of fear that we're contending with as a society and the amount of divisiveness, you know, the political conversations can quickly become philosophical, intellectual, or abstract in a way that's kind of severed from people's personal stories, their needs, their hopes and dreams, their fears and their trauma. And so in groups, you know, conversations can quickly devolve into right and wrong, good and bad, us versus them. And the modern analytic approach to progressive emotional communication can really provide a roadmap through this difficult emotional terrain. It's actually one of the aspects of modern analytic therapy that I value the most and that I think can be helpful with all the difficult experiences within ourselves as individuals and interpersonal experiences. And then I just say, just in terms of this dimension of our lives right now and our work as clinicians, I really hope to provide an opportunity for the therapists, the students, the people in attendance to just discuss the emotional, the physical, the psychological impact of listening to our patients' experiences and, you know, their responses to what feels like relentless political warfare at times.
And yeah, it sounds like just giving people a space to sort of experience that. And, you know, we all experience it at work, but a chance to really talk about that and explore how we might shift how we relate to it.
That's right, to not be as alone with it, with what we are containing and hearing and feeling day after day.
Yeah. So I want to change a little bit of the focus. And just to give people a sense about you, you know, just a little bit of your history. How did you get started leading groups? Like what got you into group?
Okay. Well, you know, my interest in groups and becoming a group therapist came directly from my experience as a group member, which began back in the mid 80s. At that time, I was in graduate school in music, and I was also in a classical analysis with an analyst who recommended that I join a therapy group. And when I look back on it now, given having had a very difficult family background and having felt like an outsider in most groups for most of my life, I'm kind of shocked and amazed that I took her up on her recommendation and joined the group. But I did. And I'll always be grateful to her because that recommendation really changed the course of my life. With the exception of 1 year when I relocated to Austin, Texas in the late 80s, I've been a member of a weekly therapy group ever since. So my group membership has probably been one of the most enriching and healing experiences that I've had in life. And it's tremendously benefited my group leadership. Such that like when I was in graduate school and doing practica, and kind of completed my graduate training, I just assumed that the people I worked with would also be in a group and that it would be part of their treatment and very helpful to them. And that as soon as I got a chance, I'd be starting a group. So it kind of came out of being a group member and knowing the healing power.
I mean, that's where the best of us come from, right? Like we sort of know it, we know it personally.
Right.
And then what got you interested in and excited about modern analytics specifically?
Yeah. Well, I started attending the American Group Psychotherapy Association annual meetings in the early 90s, mid 90s. And I loved those meetings. I thought I was hearing some of the most clear and explicit explanations of theory, not just for group therapy, but of the various theoretical approaches to treatment that I'd ever heard, and I really enjoyed hearing experts in the field articulate why they did what they did and how they thought about the work. And what I started to notice is that the modern analytic group therapists really seemed to enjoy their work, and that there were a lot of them practicing well into, you know, kind of older age. And so that really interested me. And I also experience them as being emotionally engaged and willing to make mistakes and to be human. So it was very appealing to me and inspired me to seek out modern analytic training and treatment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it sounds like it was a combo of the theoretical and depth that you felt, as well as your just experience of a sense of like, oh, I'd like to be like these people.
They've got something I want.
Yeah, they got something I want. Yeah,
I think they're enjoying their work, mm-hmm. and they seem very mm-hmm. alive in it, and mm-hmm. the group seem alive.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, that's. I love it. I love that as your inspiration.
Right.
What are your greatest challenges when you lead groups? I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, so.
Yep.
I imagine you kind of have your greatest hits of, you know,
of mistakes. Yeah, and vulnerabilities.
Yes. Group.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a great question. I'll talk more about this during the workshop too. I guess primarily because of my role in my family of origin. I have an automatic tendency to overfunction and to be overly enthusiastic for people's growth. But this can cause me at times to work harder than my patients mm-hmm. and to interfere with members having their problems more fully in the group.
Mm.
So this is one of the automatic things that I just kind of work with on a day in, day out basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Thanks for that vulnerability. I can really relate to that. My desire for growth can sometimes not leave enough space for where they really are and what they're really ready for.
Yeah, Laura, I like it as you said that too, because what it made me think of is I have this sense that a lot of people who are interested in being group therapists or who mm-hmm. lead groups mm-hmm. come from similar backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And they had certain roles that were assigned to them within their families of origin. And one of it is really trying hard to help other people grow and change, regardless of whether they're that interested in it.
Yes. So, yep, it's so true.
Right.
It's so true.
There'll probably be a lot of people in the room who can relate to that.
Yes, I think so. And listening. I think a lot of people listening might be laughing too.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, relatedly, creating and starting groups, I mean, it's always a challenge and obviously been doing it for a long time. I just wonder if you can share some words of wisdom to our community for things that you've come to know help with really getting groups going.
Absolutely. I'll share some thoughts I have about that right now. And I'll also be willing to share things during the workshop as questions come to people's mind. Just to repeat what I said earlier, being a member of a group instills confidence in the power of group. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to recommend that everybody in San Francisco is not already in a group, or Northern California, find a group, get in there and just start working. But the reason I think it's so important is I believe it impacts the kind of conversations we have with potential group members about the importance of group treatment. Mm-hmm. We come from a place of confidence about that groups are places where really wonderful things can mm-hmm. happen. Mm-hmm. In a way of translating it more directly, is that from my first contact with a potential patient, I let them know that I specialize in group therapy, and that many of the patients I work with are in weekly groups in mm-hmm. for their individual therapy. I just kind of tell them that.
Mm-hmm.
And then as my work proceeds with an individual patient, you know, many people pretty readily will start talking about their relationships, mm-hmm. about what works well, what doesn't work as well. As people start to identify and articulate, you know, some of their interpersonal challenges, I'll just say that's the kind of the difficulty that gets worked on really well in a therapy group.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And what tends to happen is after a while of people working with me individually and them mentioning interpersonal problems and me saying that, they'll start developing curiosity about groups.
Mm-hmm.
They'll start asking me things about a group.
Mm-hmm.
And I just support that curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, we're probably going to directly engage in a conversation about when would be a good time for them to join a group.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, I almost never work with an individual patient that I'm not preparing to eventually join a group.
Mm.
Every person I work with, I'm thinking, are they in a group? When will be the time for them to add a group to their treatment?
It's inspiring, Jeff. I aspire to that. I'm curious, do you have a particular time frame that's kind of the usual lead time from the beginning of when somebody starts to the average time it takes for you to get them ready?
That's a great question. I was trained psychodynamically, and early on I was kind of given a model that I don't hold to quite as much. I had was given the impression, once if people have been in therapy for a year and a half, 2 years, then it's time for them to join a group, and then they'll probably gradually leave individual and just be in group and leave the group. And I worked that way for a long time. Now my hope is that most of the people I work with will eventually be in individual and group. I think that's a very desirable form. It benefits the individual treatment. It benefits the group treatment. So I think about that. What I tend to look at is how much can people have, do people have a beginning sense of what they're feeling inside? And can they contain stimulation and difficult feelings without going into action physically? And are they starting to get a sense of how their history might affect them some and of what they might need to learn a little bit more about to be in increasingly fulfilling relationships? So I'm just, my answer feels a little vague right now as I'm talking to you, Laura, but I'm just thinking, I'm really looking for just ability to sit with feelings a bit, to tolerate some frustration, to come to their therapy in a regular way and let me know when they can't be there, and to not go into action in a way that could be hurtful to them or to other people. Those are some of the things.
Yeah, those sound like those are some of your readiness criteria.
Yeah, that's right.
So helpful. I imagine people who are starting groups or thinking about starting groups are going to find what you just said really, really helpful. So just maybe as a closing question, anything that you're looking forward to in meeting with us in the Bay Area, Northern California?
Absolutely. I'm totally excited to have the opportunity to work with the members of Northern California Group Psychotherapy Society. You know, I've gotten to know quite a few wonderful group therapists from your community through the American Group Association over the years. And each time we've had an annual meeting in San Francisco, I've been really moved by the depth of diversity, by the cultural richness of your community. So I felt so excited when I was contacted about coming out to present. And then on a personal level, you know, I, as a young gay man who grew up in the South, you know, in North Carolina, my friends and I used to refer to San Francisco as the promised land. So, yeah, so that part of the country just holds a whole lot of powerful symbolic significance for me as a gay man. And I'm feeling really hopeful that we're going to have a very meaningful experience out there during this training.
Oh, I do too. I'm so looking forward to having you. We are just so, so lucky that you have said yes and are coming. And so I just want to, as we wrap up, I just want to let our listeners know registration is up and online now so that you can register for this amazing event with Jeff. It's on the NCGPS website, www.ncgps.org. And actually we have an early bird registration. It's going to close on Saturday, September 8th. So take care of your registration early and save money. So thank you. Thank you so much, Jeff. I'm looking forward to seeing you in October.
Me too.
Okay. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.